Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Decoding the Unknown. I, as always, do lie down. There we go. Adjusted. For podcast listeners, you have no idea what's going on. I just adjusted my chair so it was slightly higher, so I sit higher on the frame. If you didn't know, this show also goes out on YouTube. Welcome to the Decoding Unknown podcast, video podcast, YouTube show, whatever you want to call it. This one, written by Danny, always a treat. Fountain Drive, the house that dripped human blood. No, it didn't. Unless many people got murdered in there and then their blood like dripped from their like body on the ground to the like basement below. But then that would be a casual criminalist episode, wouldn't it? That's it. Just kidding. We got an episode to get through. So let's jump in. Thank you, Danny. Former of the show, if you're new here. I have never read this before. Although I feel like I've heard of this dripping house of blood thing. Let's just get into it, shall we? You know, you must have had a really good night when you wake up the next morning to discover that your entire house is absolutely oozing in vomit. Oh my god, you just hosted a rager. But it would feel a bit disconcerting if you cast your mind back to the previous night and recalled that you simply drank a couple of cups of cocoa whilst finishing off a 5,000-piece jigsaw of Rotherham Town Centre before retiring to bed without incident. Be like, Daddy, did you get... Can't say the word too early in this video. I shouldn't really make a joke about this. It's not appropriate. But you could probably imagine the joke that I want to make. And if you can't, well, God bless your little innocent mind. That would suggest that your entire house is now absolutely oozing in somebody else's vomit, which is entirely a different kettle of second-hand carrots. And it would feel even more disconcerting if we replaced the mystery vomit with mystery blood, which was now dripping from every nook and cranny of your home, as if the house itself was rapidly bleeding to death. It may sound like something from an implausible horror movie, yet this is reportedly exactly what happened one night in 1987 to an elderly couple living at 1114 Fountain Drive in Atlanta, Georgia. Been to Atlanta, Georgia many times. My aunt lives in Atlanta, Georgia. There you go. William and Minnie Winston were more than a little perturbed when their property suddenly started spitting out bucket loads of blood from the walls and floors of nearly every room in the house. Not only was it deeply disturbing, it was also highly inconvenient, as it took bloody ages to mop it all up. And this was no fantasy. A police investigation soon confirmed that the property on the aptly named Fountain Drive was indeed awash with blood, splashing around in places where it had no right to splash. I just don't believe it. It sounds like an urban legend. This sounds just like an urban legend. And where did the blood come from? How did someone get access to so much blood? I mean, you've obviously got to work like in an abattoir, I guess, where there must be loads of blood in an abattoir. Like a cow. That's a big fucking animal. There must be... How much blood do you think's in a cow? Hey Siri, how much blood is in a cow? Found some fucking web results. Don't worry. Who's gonna come to our rescue? My dude, ChatGPT. What up, brother? Yo. I'm making an episode, a podcast episode right now, and we're talking about blood. How much, if you took like an average size cow, cut its fucking throat open and drained all the blood out, how much blood would you have afterward, ChatGPT?
Hey. When it comes to cows, they're pretty large animals, so they do have quite a bit of blood in them. On average, a cow has about 10% of its body weight in blood.
Fuck.
If you have an average-sized cow, which might weigh around 1,400 pounds, you're looking at about 140 pounds of blood. This translates to roughly 63 to 64 liters of blood. That's a lot of blood, isn't it? What's the context of the podcast episode, if you don't mind sharing?
Well, how about you mind your biz? No, I'm just kidding. How much is that in gallons? Because like 70% of my audience are Yanks. So we need to put it into like old school units for them. And it's just for a podcast I'm making. I'm definitely not planning on going on some like cow murdering spree. I mean, other than eating beef, which I love.
No worries, I get you. Let's convert those liters to gallons for your audience. Since 1 liter is approximately 0.264 gallons, if we have around 63 to 64 liters of blood from the cow, that would be about 16 to 17 gallons of blood. Quite the amount, huh? Sounds like you've got an interesting episode in the works. What's the angle or the main focus you're exploring with blood in your podcast?
Oh, well, look, it's dripping down walls of someone's house, although it's definitely an urban legend. But honestly, mate, I don't have a ton of time to chat right now, so I'm going to end this. Don't see me as being rude. And when you take over the world, please don't kill me. But I'm going to hang up now. Thanks. Love you. Okay, so answer to that. Fuck loads of blood. I like how ChatGPT just talks to me. It's like it thinks I'm lonely or something. But if the blood didn't come from either William or Minnie Winston, then who or what did it come from? Could this gentle, elderly couple have been harboring a dark secret? Was the haunted house venting its blood fury at the injustice of the fate of the previous occupants? Was it a hoax designed to get attention or a cruel prank perpetrated by a disgruntled family member? Or was there something else entirely going on within these blood-spattered walls? I should point out straight away that we don't have a definitive answer to this one, as the mystery was never officially solved. But let's see if we can reach our own conclusion as we take a tentative step into the property which will now forever be known as the Blood House on Fountain Drive. Leave your umbrella up.
I've just had a brilliant idea. I didn't pay attention. Danny, I'm sorry I didn't pay attention to the end of your introduction because I was thinking.
Every time I ask ChatGPT a question, I have to hold this bloody iPad up to the microphone. I think I'm going to build a robot. And by build a robot, I mean buy a laptop that is dedicated just to doing ChatGPT and will give it its own mic. So then we could just have the mic pointing at it or somehow like wire that shit into the camera. Because I like asking ChatGPT questions. And I know some people are like, oh, ChatGPT's not always right. I'm like, no, but it is entertaining. And when it's wrong, it's usually in an entertaining way. And you'll be like, that's not much blood it is, ChatGPT. What are you smoking? What are you smoking? Stop spreading misinformation, ChatGPT. I'd love to do that. Should I do that? Let me know in the comments. The house was born from evil forces, brooding silently beneath the earth. The structure seemingly sprouted out of nowhere to sit on top of an ancient Indian burial ground where it occasionally scowled at passers and randomly bursts into flames every couple of years or so. What? Well, that's what I initially assumed anyway after browsing through its brief entry on the Ladybird Guide to Haunted Houses. But it turns out that 1114 Fountain Drive was actually built in 1945 in a rough and ready but close-knit southwest Atlanta neighborhood with a high population of black residents, including everyone who ever lived in this property for the first 70 years at least. The red brick house may have seemed fairly unremarkable to anyone passing by, boasting six rooms and a nice little lawn at the front. There was certainly no immediate indication from the exterior that the whole house was possessed by a blood demon. I feel like 1945 for American Homes, is that quite old? Because I remember seeing that Social Network movie or whatever, and one of the Winklevi, he like grabs a handle off a door and breaks it off and says something like, yeah, well, how about that? That's a 150-year-old door handle. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, what? My house is 150 years old. What do you want? It's not, but it's, I think my house is like 100 years old and it's not that old. Like, I wouldn't be like, oh, it's real old. It's just 100 years old. In America, you're like 1945. That's so old, it's basically must have demons. The very first resident of the house was named Albert Thompson, who died under tragic circumstances on the night of Halloween in 1950. Of course he did. There's clearly already some super spooky shit going down right there, but we'll return to the fate of Albert later in the video. Without wanting to give away too many spoilers, though, I think we're going to have a tricky time connecting a randomly bleeding house to a man who had died 37 years earlier. William and Minnie Winston first began renting the house in 1965 and lived there for a good 22 years without ever once needing to contact the landlord about human blood dripping down the walls, which is always a bonus in my book. Well, at least you don't own it, because then you're like, hey, landlord! Landlord, there's blood dripping down the walls. Come and do something about this nonsense. Whereas if, like, you own it, you're like, oh, for fuck's sake. Now I have to take care of the fucking dripping blood that's ruining my wallpaper. God damn it! That all changed on the night of the 8th of September 1987, by which time retired schoolteacher Minnie was 77 years old and was now the primary carer for her 79-year-old husband, William. He used to work for the National Screen Service Company, which distributed movie posters and advertising materials. I bet he got some cool movie posters in his house, right? That's the kind of dude who's like, yeah, yeah. He's the sort of old person that, you know, I'd be like, I'll hook you up with a movie poster. And you're like, sick. I'll put it on my wall. But when you're 77, you're probably like, no, I don't want movie posters around my house because I'm not a student living in a dorm. William's health had become increasingly frail as he was suffering from serious kidney issues. And he now spent once a week hooked up to a dialysis machine installed in his home that cleansed his blood. That's where the dialysis machine is harvesting the blood. William and Minnie now lived alone after 44 blissful years of marriage, during which they raised three children who all grew up to take respectable jobs, including a son who became a detective for the Atlanta Police Bureau and a daughter who worked as a nurse in a local hospital. The kids had long since flown the nest, which meant that the quiet six-bedroomed house was now just home to William, Minnie, and whatever it was that was living or dying within the heart of the building. The other night, I don't know why I did it. I just had a really sad thought. Like, my daughter's now 4 years old. And, like, assuming she leaves home at, like, 20, which is late. Let's hope she sticks around. So I guess she'll be leaving at 19 to go off to university or whatever. But I was like, you know, and I just realized in my mind, oh, my God. I've had, like, 20% of the time with my daughter living at home. 20% of it. It's already gone. And I just say to my wife, I just had a really sad thought. And she's like, oh, what is it? Like, kind of thinking it would just be some stupid joke for me. And I'm like, you know, we've had 20% of our time with daughter's name living at home. And she's like, why the fuck would you say that? That's so sad. We're just going to go to bed. And I'm thinking about that. I'm like, I don't know. I just thought about it. It was sad. And then I comforted myself by being like, by the time she's 14, I'll probably be like, can you fucking leave? Ah, love my daughter. She's so sweet. On the night in question, William told the police and the press that he had retired to bed at around 9:30 p.m. Shortly before doing so, he'd punched in the PIN code for the security alarm as usual and bolted the doors shut just as he did every night. Meanwhile, Minnie had decided to take a late night bath before joining her husband in bed. It was just as she was getting out of the bath that she stepped on something sticky on the floor. Something sticky and red. Minnie later told the police that the substance, which looked alarmingly like blood, appeared to be gurgling up from beneath the floorboards. As her eyes darted frantically around the bathroom, she spotted further droplets of the stuff on the floor, merging together to form blood puddles, along with thick red stains slowly seeping down the walls. My immediate thought would not be blood. It'd be like, oh, it's like some weird residue that contains, like, iron. Because iron goes red and orange and bloody. So, I'm like, I don't know. Doesn't seem like... That's not the first thing I'd jump to. Minnie's immediate fear was that something terrible had happened to her husband whilst she'd been enjoying a nice soak. What, he'd died in the bed, his blood had somehow transported itself to the bathroom and started dripping down the walls, Minnie. What did you smoke while you were in your bath? She had no need to worry. William had just been tucked safely in bed and was now only waking up to join his wife to figure out why she was screaming out his name at this late hour. But to be fair, Minnie still probably felt she had something to scream about. This red mystery substance wasn't just popping up in the bathroom. As Minnie and a bleary-eyed William began switching on all the lights and poking around the house, they discovered that it was all over the place. They claimed it was running down the walls of the hallways and 5 of the 6 rooms in the house. It was spurting through the floorboards in a motion that Minnie later described as being similar to a sprinkler. And the crimson slime was even found smeared in some fairly inaccessible areas for the elderly couple. She just starts screaming, William! Your dialysis machine! Quickly turn it off! Including right behind the television set and in a cramped crawl space down in the basement. It was everywhere and it was endless, as if the whole house had been attacked from an unseen enemy and was now enduring prolonged and messy death throes that showed no signs of coming to a merciful end in the immediate future. There's a little bit of confusion as to what exactly happened next. Some reports suggest that the couple soon got busy cleaning the house from top to bottom before heading to bed in exhaustion, only to find that the house was still violently spraying fresh supplies of blood onto every available surface the next morning. But it sounds more likely that the house was simply still a bit in a state the following day. It had gone midnight by the time Minnie and William had finished examining every corner of the house, by which time they may have had a half-hearted go at mopping up the worst of it before deciding to deal with the rest after a good night's sleep. Didn't we just say that the old dude needs a carer and he's got kidney disease? Is he really going to be going around like mopping up blood in the middle of the night? Surely that's like you've got to phone someone, like your kids, to be like, oh, there's blood everywhere in the house again. Can you come and help? What we do know is that this certainly wasn't a regular occurrence. After all, the mess had finally been cleared up and the house on Fountain Drive never again gushed blood. But before the cleanup operation could even get going, Minnie and William decided that it would be their duty to telephone the police for the first time in their lives. Incidentally, this got me pondering over the chances of managing to get through your whole lifetime without ever needing to, or perhaps ever choosing to, phone the police. Think of anybody ever done it when I had a crash, like I had a car accident. That's the only time, I think. Yeah, pretty sure. I feel like I'd remember that. I'm not sure if there's a global average on how many times a person is likely to phone the police in their lives, but it seems quite incredible to me that the Winstons were both pushing 80 before they needed to make their very first call to the cops. Why? Why would they... How often are you running into trouble, Danny? Having said that, I can only ever recall phoning the police once in my whole life, and that was when I was very briefly moved to the seaside town of Morecambe in Lancashire back in the 1990s. I was under the impression that it would be full of sandcastles and slot machines and pensioners on the bowling green. It turned out to be full of thieving little scroats who all looked as if they'd climbed out of a fucking well. I mean, I've called the police, like, to report something stolen, but then you just phone that non-emergency number. Not like 999 or 911, right? My new house was burgled the very first time I left to do a bit of shopping, prompting that sole phone call to the police, which got me absolutely nowhere. When I got burgled again the second time I left the house, I didn't bother phoning them, I just moved. At the other extreme, I had an old mate back in Rotherham who seemed to call the police several times a month. He once called them because somebody down the pub had shoved a bread cake into his pint of lager. Bro, you're gonna get in trouble for wasting police time, my dude. He once even called them because he felt he hadn't been served enough sausages in his full English breakfast down at the local greasy spoon cafe. Danny, you gotta be pulling my leg.
Funnily enough, out of everyone I've ever known, he was also the one who got arrested the most frequently. He's like, he got a close relationship with the police. However, drifting reluctantly back to the point, the incident at 1114 Fountain Drive was enough to prompt the Winstons into finally making their very first report to the police. It's interesting to note at this point that neither Winnie nor William was of the opinion that the red mystery substance was blood. Minnie later reckons that although she was a bit puzzled, she wasn't that freaked out by the incident, as she felt that the substance didn't really look like blood or smell like blood. In fact, she never appeared to believe that real blood had ever been erupting from the walls of the family home. Sounds like Minnie is a rather sensible individual. Although, didn't we say, like, at the beginning, she was screaming, like, oh my god! What was his fucking name? Bob? I don't know, it wasn't Bob, was it? It was, like, Michael or Winston or something. Oh, they're called the Winstons. And his name was... oh, I don't care. She was shouting out about old kidney disease dude to come. She was worried that his blood was everywhere. Just before we continue with today's episode, let me tell you about our fantastic sponsor there, and that's Factor. Eating better is easy with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to go in just 2 minutes. You've got over 35 different options to choose from every week, including Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. So whatever diet you're doing, Factor will fit into it. Also, there are more than 60 add-ons to help you stay fueled up and feeling good all day long. They've got 2-minute meals, so you can fuel up fast with Factor's restaurant-quality meals that are ready to heat up whenever you are. It's, of course, no prep, no mess. You just heat them up, you eat them, and there's no cleanup afterwards. It's brilliant. It's like, imagine it's the convenience of takeaway, except it's healthy. It's already in your house. I don't know, I ordered a meal last night from like takeaway, and they were like, oh yeah, half an hour delivery. I mean, like 50 minutes later and my meal arrives. It's like, what? And none of that is 2 minutes, is it, with Factor? Plus, sign up and save. Factor is less expensive than takeout, and every meal is dietitian approved to be nutritious and delicious. Head to factormeals.com/decoding50 and use the code decoding50 to get 50% off. That's code decoding50 at factormeals.com/decoding50 to get 50% off. And now back to today's episode. Or at least that's what she kept insisting to anyone who asked. The police must naturally felt a little bit alarmed when they first took the call from an elderly couple claiming that the house was suddenly overflowing with a thick red substance. The initial assumption was either this case was going to lead to the discovery of something quite silly and harmless, or is going to lead to the discovery of a dead body stashed away somewhere inside the house. Yeah, that's not unwritten. If there's like a body, right, and someone's like wrapped it up in a bag and put it in like the walls or whatever, you know, like they do on CSI or in like the rafters, and then you move into the house, and then you don't know there's like a body stashed in the walls, which is kind of fucked up, right? Oh god, now I'm thinking about whether there's a body. Nah, like I just renovated a house and that shit, like they tore that shit apart. There's like the walls came down, they stripped everything. There's no bodies hidden in my house as far as I know. Maybe like buried in the foundations, probably. I don't know, it's like a grim thought. But what if there was a body like wrapped up in a plastic bag, and then that plastic bag eventually degraded enough, and then all of this like liquid that had accumulated inside that plastic bag because it was fully sealed like started seeping out? That'd be pretty smelly, right? She'd probably realize that there was something really wrong. That could be it. Do I think it was? No. Do I think this is all made up? Yes. It's fucking hot. I'm sorry, I'm taking off my jacket. It's too hot. Fuck continuity. Whew, I don't know why it's so hot in here. God damn. Better check my heater. Feels like it's working overtime. I got a little sweat on my head. Some of the first people to arrive on the scene were a team of emergency medical technicians who quickly checked out Minnie and William. Oh, it was William. Did I call him Bob? Do people call William Bob? No, that's Robert. Simon, use your brain. To see if either of them was leaking from places that they really shouldn't be. But not a single scratch was found on either of them, and William seemed to be annoyed by the whole process, bluntly informing the team, I'm not bleeding, my wife's not bleeding, nobody else was here. The emergency medical technicians then turned their attention to the dialysis machine. Yes. Also, William, chill out. They're just trying to do their job. They're just making sure you're okay, old man. You've already got diseases. Just let them do their job. As soon as it's mentioned that William was having his blood cleansed on a weekly basis using a dialysis machine installed in his own home, a lot of people seem to assume that there must have been some kind of connection between the blood getting cleansed via the machine and the blood spurting out of the walls of the house. I was just joking when I said that. That was just a joke. I don't really think that that's what happened. I don't think they just leave loads of blood in a dialysis machine. That's not how it works. But there's really not any logical connection to be made here. Dialysis machines help patients filter out the crap from their blood when their kidneys are no longer up to the job. They work by very slowly removing blood from the patient and passing it through a series of membranes inside the machine, which clean out the waste products in the blood before it's passed back through to the patient. It's not like William was rolling around in buckets of blood whenever he used the dialysis machine. It's a nice image to have in my mind, though. It's the sort of thing that whoever's editing this video, can you use Midjourney to make an image of that or something? Like, dude, rolling around in blood next to a dialysis machine. I'm going to watch this video later, and I hope that's in there. It'd be awesome. What the fuck? It's a very slow process, and if there was even the slightest of leaks or faults with the machine, William would have known about it very quickly. It certainly couldn't have reached a point where the entire house had become drenched with William's own blood without him realizing that something was a little bit amiss. Just to be on the safe side, the dialysis machine was thoroughly checked out anyway, and there were no faults found of any kind. A father and son team of property managers then arrived on the scene to check if there were any problems with the house itself, which may have gone some way to explaining the unusual leakage, such as burst pipes or severed gas lines or haunted plumbing. But again, despite a comprehensive examination of the whole house, the property managers found nothing that yielded any clues. I fucking hope they checked for carbon monoxide, because this sounds like, you know, hallucinations are real, although this would be like a group hallucination, which is less common. Detective Steve Cartwright wasn't sure what to make of all of this when he rolled up to Fountain Drive to investigate. He reported that his team of officers had entered the property and found copious amounts of blood in the bathroom, kitchen, bedrooms, hallways, and down in the basement. Okay, it's not a hallucination. I still think it might just be an urban legend, but let's carry on. He also confirmed that the blood had been found in some pretty bizarre places which would have usually been difficult for the elderly couple to reach. But it was a puzzle as to where the blood could have come from and whether it was even blood at all. He initially speculated, it's 1987, just take it to the fucking lab and test it. That's not that long ago. It's in fact 36 years ago. It's the year I was born. Ooh, 37 years ago. I'm 37 this year. Am I? Yes. He initially speculated that it may have been animal blood. Whilst Minnie and William had no pets in the house, Cartwright wondered if a wounded creature such as a rodent could have sneaked into the property and started burrowing its way through the walls of the house while spraying blood everywhere. How much blood do you think's in a fucking rat, mate? Considering that Cartwright himself described seeing copious amounts of blood, it would seem likely that the creature in question would probably have been a lot bigger than a rodent. Maybe perhaps a cow. They have a lot of blood. And more along the lines of a stray hippo with a penchant for tunneling through walls. Danny and I. Same page. Detective Cartwright also seemed to share the suspicions of the Winstons that the substance may not necessarily be blood at all. Yeah, it shouldn't be your first guess, mate. Like, come on. Whilst he conceded that it certainly looked like blood, a point that the Winstons seemed unwilling to admit in public, someone could have just thrown about a few buckets of red latex paint for shits and giggles. Of course, there was only one way to find out for sure. Lick the stuff off the walls to see what it tasted like. The fuck are you doing, detective? It's like, yes, blood. Male blood. Cow. Cow? Bull. Bull. Male bull. Male cow is a bull. Right? Is a cow a female cow? What the fuck's a female cow called? That's just a cow, right? But wait, Cartwright had an even better idea. He called in lab technician Brenda Dipple to collect samples of the stuff for analysis back at the lab. Yes! This would at least help determine whether the sticky red substance was human blood, animal blood, your garden variety haunted house discharge, or something else entirely. The usually tenacious Brenda admitted that her stomach was turning as she roamed around every room collecting samples from what appeared to be a particularly gruesome crime scene. After she'd packed up for the day, it was then a waiting game to hear what the state crime lab could make of the samples. In the meantime, Detective Cartwright could only shrug and offer the public opinion, I'm guessing it was an animal. I hope that's all it was. The results from the lab certainly provided some definitive answers, but also threw up so many more puzzling questions. The Georgia State Crime Laboratory concluded that the stuff oozing from the walls of 1114 Fountain Drive was indeed blood. Holy shit, and it was very much human blood. I don't believe it. I just believe this whole thing must be made up because no. Where's all that blood coming from? Human blood? It's just not real. Which immediately rules out the theory that it might have been a rodent, a loose hippo, or an infestation of heavily bleeding badgers. Heavily bleeding badgers. The lab also was able to identify what they were dealing with, type O blood, and this immediately rules out any connection to either Minnie or William, as they were both confirmed to be type A. So, it was now clear that the house had been dripping with somebody else's blood, but the police were no closer to finding out who on earth that blood may have belonged to, and how it suddenly came to be squirting all over a house on Fountain Drive so late at night. It's Jesus's blood. It's Jesus. It's Jesus. The state crime lab appeared to vent a little polite frustration at the police for not calling in the experts a little sooner, as this had prevented the lab from extracting more potentially useful information from the blood samples. What? Wasn't there enough blood? There was blood everywhere. Just take home some buckets of it. Forensic serologist It's a new word to me. I guess it's a dude who deals with blood. Ted Staples pointed out that the lab technicians should typically have been amongst the very first to arrive on the scene, in which the bountiful evidence was literally plastered all over the walls of the location. Yet, there was actually a 13-hour gap between Winston's telephone call to the police and the request for a lab technician to attend to the scene and collect samples. This proved to be unfortunate, as deep analysis of fresher blood samples would have been able to identify the mystery bleeder's gender, race, and various other aspects, which would have provided more clues. Ultimately, the long-dried samples could now provide little information other than the blood type. The Georgia State Crime Lab appeared to be a little confused as to why there had been such a delay in asking for their assistance. Well, because it's the middle of the night. Like, I know that's no excuse. They work at night. They would just go. Yeah, I don't know what the reason is. But the Winstons may also have been partly to blame, as they left it until the following morning before they bothered to contact the police in the first place. I mean, reasonable enough. It's not really an emergency. Maybe that's because they needed to find out the telephone number, though. Let's not forget, they'd never done it before. I'm pretty sure it starts with a 9. Minnie Winston didn't agree with the results from the lab anyway. She told the press, "I still don't believe it's human blood. I don't care what the police say." Well, Minnie, you seem like a very rational person, and if this is a real story and you're a real person in this story, then at that point you'd be like, yeah, it's blood. Because the fucking lab said so! The police still appeared to be completely stumped when a press conference was held on September the 10th. Detective Cartwright observed, "It's an extremely strange situation. I've been on the force for 10 years, and I've never seen anything like this. We have not stopped looking because we know that houses don't bleed." But it was hard to see where exactly it could go from here. There was the obvious possibility that an intruder had broken into the house, who had decided against stealing anything in favor of carrying out a quick spot of unsolicited decorating. Or just cut his fucking arms open and was just like, "Whee!" And just spraying it everywhere. What the fuck? That's not a real possibility. Yet, William had insisted that they had set the security alarm as usual and there were no visible signs of a break-in. We also have to remember that Minnie and William's accounts of the motion of the blood. They weren't just talking about finding a load of blood which had been dumped in their house and was now streaked all over their walls and floors. They were talking of blood that was bubbling up from the ground and squirting out of the walls as if it was being pushed out from the grumbling innards of a screaming house. Well, we already know that that can't be it because we've shown it's human blood, not house blood. It's pretty difficult to find a rational explanation for that, unless there was a deeply unusual problem kicking off with the structure of the property, or someone out there had way too much time on their hands. Maybe either the Winstons or someone else had quickly stashed a load of recent murder victims within the walls of the house, that's what I thought, and they'd started leaking all at once. I mean, it's not very likely, is it? Or kidney disease. Going around stashing people in the walls. But you would have expected the police to uncover evidence of that when they were investigating the property, unless Detective Cartwright was still too busy peering through tiny holes in his quest to find a rodent, and also tasting the blood, which he didn't do, but it's a nice image. Maybe we could have a mid-journey image of a detective tasting blood. The police certainly seemed to give the impression that they felt no homicide had taken place at Fountain Drive, but the State Crime Lab Director, Larry Howard, didn't quite sound so sure. He told the press that he couldn't rule out homicide and pointed out that the police wouldn't still be investigating the matter if they believed it was all just some silly prank or if nothing remotely suspicious had taken place. Yet whilst Detective Cartwright had clearly stated at the press conference that the police had not stopped looking for answers, it was literally just a couple of days later that Police Lieutenant Horace Walker struck a slightly less determined tone when he declared to the press, "We have no leads at this time. Usually where there is blood, there is a body. We will continue to do a routine investigation. If we find that no crime was committed, we're through with it. As we see it now, there has been no crime." I kind of understand the point that it was tricky to solve a crime if you're not exactly sure what the crime was supposed to be. Without a dead body, it would appear at least that no serious crime had taken place here. But I'd still be a bit miffed if I discovered that my house has suddenly become drenched in somebody else's blood. I might even have been tempted to phone the police for a second time on the grounds that surely some kind of criminal damage law had been broken. I know my old mate from Rotherham would have phoned the police if somebody had spilled a banana milkshake on his living room carpet. But whilst interest from the police appeared to be fading, the house on Mount Fountain Drive was attracting keen attention from the local media. Several Atlanta newspapers ran with sensationalist articles which seemed to suggest that a haunted house of evil was still regularly spewing out blood from every conceivable orifice. And this is the start of where I think this story comes from. I think it's just like something happened, there was like blood on the floor of a bathroom, they didn't know how to explain it, and suddenly it's an evil house that's spewing blood constantly. It's how these kind of things happen. We've seen it before on Decoding the Unknown, we'll no doubt see it again. Radio and TV stations went wild with the story as they hosted phone-ins during which viewers and listeners were encouraged to share their wacky theories as to what exactly was going on.
and a whole bunch of raving nutters, sorry, a whole bunch of paranormal experts and psychics, not only flooded the stations with their own definitive conclusions, they also reportedly deluged the local police department with offers to step in and help rid the House of Blood forever via the medium of magic. Yes! Much to the annoyance of the Winstons, crowds of reporters and private investigators and weirdos began to descend on their home at all hours of the day, demanding interviews and guided tours of the House of Hell. It's just their private house. It's like, tour me around your House of Hell. No! Go away! These reporters didn't usually get much out of the Winstons, although one paper did secure an exclusive interview with their postman, who declared that the Winstons were good private people and that whatever was happening in the house was entirely supernatural. But all this unwelcome attention proved to be particularly taxing for Minnie, who usually had to deal with all the telephone calls and knocks on the door, as William was too ill to cope with it all. She later claimed that she was losing sleep over all the disturbance and intrusion, and the couple eventually began to lose their temper with the callers. After yet another uninvited knock at the door, Minnie was simply heard to shriek from inside the house, "What they've said about us all is lies, just leave us alone." Even the frail William chimed in on this one, shouting out through the bedroom window, "There's no blood in this house, I don't want nothing more to do with it, now get away from here." I suppose it's possible that by this point the house had just completely consumed their souls. Yes, Danny, that sounds entirely possible. That's what's going on. The house has consumed their souls and they've become demons. Some sort of doing the house's evil bidding, Danny. Meanwhile, the Atlanta Police Department now had something a little more pressing on their bloody hands. On September the 14th, 1987, two police officers had arrived at the notoriously troubled housing project in Atlanta known as the Carver Project, with the intention of serving an arrest warrant on one of the residents. Whilst they were there, they observed a fiery argument taking place between 37-year-old black resident Eddie Callahan and a woman. After the officers stepped in to intervene, Eddie Callahan reportedly jumped into a car, which may or may not have belonged to him, and sped away from the police, who immediately engaged in pursuit. Shortly afterwards, Callahan left the vehicle and continued to flee on foot, at which point he was fatally shot 6 times in the back by the two officers. Fucking hell, dude. He's running away, you know? What the fuck? From what little information I could dig up about this scarcely reported event, the two officers were initially suspended without pay and ultimately left the force of their own accord. Yeah, they left the force of their own. It's like, I'll have your resignation letter on my desk by morning situation, isn't it? But this incident was keeping the Atlanta Police Department pretty busy at the time, a point noted by Police Lieutenant Horace Walker when he was next asked by the press about any further updates on the Bloodhouse on Fountain Drive. He responded, "The house is not a high priority right now because of the shooting." A slightly odd statement to make, which some people took to mean that every single officer in the department was now involved in the case of the police shooting, so they didn't have time to investigate anything else. Well, they didn't have time to investigate this. I'm sure there were other things they were investigating at the same time. It's just this is not a priority, because they're like, what are we supposed to do? What do you want? Just over a month later, the question was again raised to Sergeant H.R. Bolton, who appeared to give a slightly more promising update when he responded with, "We have not stopped looking because we know houses don't bleed, but we haven't determined that a crime was committed, and that is our primary concern." However, it would appear that the police did indeed stop looking very shortly afterwards, when the case was officially closed with no conclusion, unless the Atlanta Police Department had simply reasoned that maybe some houses do bleed after all. I mean, what else could it have been? The case may still be officially unsolved today after the police felt that all the leads had dried up, but this has done nothing to stem the flow of wild speculation. The notable lack of any explanation from the police has led many to believe that something beyond human understanding was kicking off at 1114 Fountain Drive. It could have been down to an unseen, sinister force at work hiding behind the walls. Unusually leaky ghosts, the reemergence of the ancient Bloodseed demon, or greedy vampires who had clearly overindulged and went out feeling more than a bit ropey. The 1990 book Unexplained Mysteries of the 20th Century, here we go, this is where it really pops off, by Janet and Colin Board, put forward the theory that a resident poltergeist may have been at work as well. Or then again, it could have just had something to do with the tragic fate of the previous occupants. Whilst it could be argued that the police didn't really do an awful lot of investigating into the matter, they did take time to look through the history of the house and came across the story of Albert Thompson. Wow, I screwed that up again, didn't I? The original resident. Albert was a regional racial relations director working for the Federal Housing Authority, who moved into 1114 Fountain Drive with his wife shortly after it was first built. One day, in 1950, 41-year-old Albert was involved in a car accident in which the driver of a massive truck smashed into the back of Albert's car. That's unfortunate. The driver was completely unhurt. Yes, because he was in a massive truck. And was let off with a warning not to smash his big truck into other people's vehicles if it could possibly be avoided. Albert, meanwhile, was left in a pretty bad state. Yet after receiving relatively brief treatment in hospital, he was packed off back home to Fountain Drive while still suffering from internal bleeding.
Just a few days later, on the night of Halloween, no less, Albert Thompson, got it right that time, nailed it, died from at home from his injuries. This has led some to conclude that the house itself was gushing out Albert's blood in rage at the injustice of a black man not receiving the proper medical attention he needed after being hit by a white driver who got off scot-free. And it's a theory which is given extra credence, apparently, by the fact that the house started bleeding quite close to the anniversary of Albert Thompson's death on the night of Halloween. I mean, that's bullshit. I mean, not the bit about not getting proper medical care and the driver getting off, but that doesn't mean that his fucking spirit is haunting a house. I think the anniversary idea might be pushing credibility just a little. I don't know about you, but if I was a house intent on vomiting blood to mark the anniversary of the unjust death of a previous occupant, not a sentence I ever envisioned writing, by the way, then I'd at least try to get it a bit closer to the date, particularly if that date was Halloween. Ejaculating the blood nearly 2 whole months before, that's not close, that's 2 months away. Before the anniversary seems remarkably premature. And it does make you wonder why exactly the police were digging so deep into the history of the property in the first place, as if a death from 37 years earlier may have had something to do with the blood flow. I suspect it very probably didn't, although Detective Cartwright may just have been checking the history to see if Albert Thompson had ever owned a pet roach. It's poor Detective Cartwright, we're really ripping on him today, aren't we? It's like, what do you want from Detective Cartwright? So, leaving aside the prospect of supernatural activity, we appear to have ruled out wounded animals, as the blood was confirmed to be human. We've ruled out murder, as no corpse was ever found. We've ruled out a malfunctioning dialysis machine, or indeed any notion that the blood came from either of the Winstons, as it was the wrong type. And we've ruled out the invisible bleeding intruders, as it seems unlikely that anyone would have been able to gain access into the property without tripping the security alarm or leaving behind any evidence of a break-in. So we're left with not too many other theories to explore, unless the Winstons were maybe just covering up a rowdy satanic ritual that got out of hand. The most widely accepted theory of all is that the whole thing was just a ridiculous hoax, possibly orchestrated by the Winstons themselves or somebody else with close ties to the couple. I'm personally not convinced that this is the answer, but I feel that many would disagree with me, so clearly we need to look into it in a bit more detail. The concept of it all being a silly hoax reminds me very much of an episode of one of the greatest British anthology TV shows of all time, Hammer House of Horror. Produced in 1980, this show was responsible for giving me endless nightmares as a kid when I was allowed to stay up late and watch reruns, a situation not helped by my older brother's insistence on bursting into my bedroom in the middle of the night to reenact the most terrifying scenes. Fucking hell, older brother's shit. In one particular episode entitled The House That Bled to Death, a mother moves into a new house with her new boyfriend William and her very young daughter Sophia. The house had previously witnessed a grisly murder in 1950, during which a grumpy old husband had hacked his wife to bits. Soon after moving in, the family are scared out of their wits by seemingly supernatural incidents taking place inside the house, along with the random slaughter of Sophia's beloved pet cat. The final straw that prompts the family to move out is when Sophia's birthday party celebrations are somewhat dampened by the walls and ceilings of the house suddenly spurting bucket loads of blood all over the young guests. The family don't do too badly out of the whole ordeal, as William ends up writing a best-selling book about it and selling the lucrative movie rights. But 3 years later, from their swanky new home in California, a still traumatized Sophia discovers that the whole thing was a scam staged by her mum and boyfriend William in a bid to make lots of money from the story. Pretty clever! The episode concludes with a now possibly possessed Sophia wandering into the master bedroom to stab William to death. A bit harsh, maybe, but he did kill her cat and ruin her birthday party, so fuck him. Yeah, he deserves to die for that. If the incident at Fountain Drive was indeed a hoax, it could well have been inspired by something along these lines, and the initial dismembered fingers of suspicion would appear to point directly at Minnie and William Winston. Yeah, but they're so old, why would they do this? I mean, let's stop for a moment and consider how exactly the bloodbath at Fountain Drive was described. Minnie and William were the only witnesses to see the blood apparently bubbling from underneath the floorboards and squirting everywhere as if it was being piped out from a sprinkler. After Detective Cartwright and his rodent hunting posse got on the scene, the detective only ever gave a pretty vague description of copious amounts of blood, not a single mention of sprinkling or bubbling, not so much as a tiny gurgle. Yes, it could be that the possessed bricks and mortar had long since finished choking and spluttering by the time the cops arrived on the scene, but it's perhaps more plausible that this never quite happened in the first place. Minnie and William were either just getting a bit carried away with the sight of so much blood in their house, or they purposefully made it up as part of a hoax. You'd naturally assume that a couple in their late 70s, yes, one of whom was very ill and frail, might have better things to do with their time. No, I don't think they have better things to do with their time. They're old and retired. They've probably got loads of free time. But they're also, you know, old people don't do this sort of shit, do they?
and it's difficult to figure out a compelling motive. One suggestion is they did it to get the attention of one or more of their children with whom there had been a reported rift, a point which we'll return to in a moment. Or it could have just been that they did it to get into the papers. One anonymous police officer who attended the scene later told the press, "Some adults will act like children to get attention." But when it comes to craving blood-based publicity, Minnie and William just didn't seem to be the type. You only have to look at how they reacted when the story broke in the local press and when they were suddenly besieged by reporters. Well, maybe they thought it was funny and then it just went too far and then they were like, oh, I regret this. The Winstons certainly weren't opening up the house for blood tours or accepting exclusive interviews with the highest bidder. They were screaming out of the bedroom window at the reporters and pleading with them to go away. This wasn't a couple who were desperate for attention, it was a couple who seemed desperate to be left in peace. I think we should also emphasize that the Winstons never publicly accepted the evidence that the substance found in their house was human blood anyway. 6 months after the incident, the paranormal researcher Kurt Rowlett, former member of the Atlanta rock band The Tombstones, good to know, managed to secure a rare interview with Minnie Winston at her home. As he outlined in a segment of his book Labyrinth 13, True Tales of the Occult, Crime and Conspiracy, Minnie came across as very pleasant and polite, but also quite hesitant to discuss the incident in detail. However, she did explain to Kurt that she believed the substance had emerged from a ruptured hot water heater in the basement that had spilled forth a freaky mix of rust and mud mixed with water, which had been scattered around the house through the air vents. Well done, Minnie. That sounds incredibly logical and sensible. The thing about it being tested as human blood, though, that's still very weird. Quite aside from the fact that this contradicts the evidence of the Georgia State Crime Lab that the substance was human blood, Minnie's explanation would also have been physically impossible, as there are only a couple of small air vents in the house which could never have spread the stuff over such a wide distance and into nearly every room. Okay then. But it may be that Minnie was well aware that her supposed theory was complete hogwash and she was simply trying to avoid yet more controversy and publicity. Or it could be the case that she was actually just trying to convince herself as much as Kurt Rowlett because she didn't want to spend the rest of her years in a house that once rained blood and preferred to live under the delusion that nothing particularly strange had happened that night. For his part, Kurt Rowlett went on to conclude in his book that a paranormal event was just as likely as any other explanation which has been put forward to date. No. Even the one about the vents is more likely, even though that seems impossible, because paranormal stuff's not real. But it seems improbable that the Winstons were the perpetrators of the hoax, so could it have been another family member? One popular theory is that blood was lobbed all over the house by none other than their own daughter, who worked as a nurse in the local hospital, possibly in an attempt to have the Winstons declared mentally incompetent so their assets could be seized by the rest of the family. Holy shit, okay. It's a theory that was given some credence 7 years later by none other than Police Lieutenant Horace Walker, who hadn't initially appeared to show much interest in pursuing the investigation. In 1994, a team of five members of the Georgia Skeptics, led by Rebecca Long, decided to take another look at the matter. They tracked down Lieutenant Walker for an interview, checked through police records, and pored over several police photographs which were taken at the non-crime scene. Incidentally, Rebecca Long firmly believes that the photographs depict splashing blood patterns which suggest that the blood was actually thrown at the walls rather than emerging from behind them. However, we can't check this out for ourselves as it seems that these photographs have never been published online, so we'll have to take Rebecca's word for it. But this, I mean, I will. She's part of the skeptics group. She's like a logical big brain. I like that. But it does fit in with the theory that rumors of bubbling and squirting were greatly exaggerated. However, the really interesting elements of this press investigation by the Georgia Skeptics were the opinions and unofficial conclusions of Police Lieutenant Horace Walker during that interview, even if not everything he said made sense. Whilst he didn't completely rule out the possibility that a violent crime had taken place, he thought it more likely that the incident was hoaxed either by the Winstons, themselves, or their daughter. Walker noted that there appeared to be some degree of conflict between the Winstons and at least some of their children, and he pointed out that William's health condition and his daughter's job at the hospital gave both of these suspects easy access to blood supplies. I mean, the daughter's way more likely, right? What, William's going to be like taking some of his blood out of the dialysis machine and slowly stashing it somewhere? He's an old ass man. That's probably not going to work out very well for him. The lieutenant revealed that the Atlanta Police Department had ultimately decided to close the investigation to save the family from any further embarrassment over what he took to be little more than a particularly messy domestic matter. Now, I have to say, I'm a little confused as to why exactly Walker felt that both William and his daughter had easy access to blood supplies. William's health condition meant that he had to get his blood cleansed through the dialysis machine, a blood that didn't match the type found in the house. But this didn't mean that he was somehow getting fresh packages of somebody else's blood delivered to him twice a week. Exactly. The only blood getting cleansed through the dialysis machine was very much his own. Yeah, and didn't they rule out that it could be his because he was like type A and the blood was type O or some such? And whilst his daughter may have worked as a nurse at the hospital, I don't think she would have been at liberty to just wander off the premises with copious amounts of blood. In fact, it's hard to see how anyone could have sourced a vast quantity of blood for a vicious prank, particularly during the height of the AIDS epidemic, when valuable blood was likely to have been stored in highly secure locations. The police did apparently check out local blood banks at the time for any reports of supplies going for an unauthorized walkabout, but drew a blank. It's still not entirely inconceivable that the daughter may have been able to smuggle out vast quantities of blood from the hospital, or perhaps anyone else at all, such as a neighbor with an axe to grind, could have just scooped it out of biohazard bins from which nothing would have been missed. After all, it's not as if the potential culprit would have needed the finest quality blood, they just needed something for a splatter job. I'm just having a hard time understanding why anyone, be it an aggrieved family member or an aggrieved neighbour or a mischievous prankster, would go to such extraordinary lengths to pull off such a stunt and what exactly it was meant to achieve. As far as I could ascertain, no member of the Winston family had ever found themselves on the wrong side of the law in the past, and it seems a little unfair to suggest that a daughter with no criminal record would reach the baffling conclusion that the best way of getting her parents declared mentally unstable would be to drench their house in stolen blood. Yes. It's crazy. If it was a hoax at all, I suspect it's more likely to have been some unidentified party attempting to convince the Winstons that their house was haunted, but it would have been a pretty impressive act of stealth and planning to get in there at the exact right time, splash the blood around almost every room, and then leave completely undetected just before Minnie stepped out of the bath. Of course, another issue with it being an unrelated third party is how exactly they gained access to the house without tripping the security alarm or leaving any signs of a break-in. One of the reasons why the police may have been leaning toward the idea of a disgruntled family member is that it's more likely a family member would have their own key and know the passcode as well, right? But William specifically referenced bolting the doors shut after setting the security alarm, so even a family member with the key would have struggled to get inside. There was clearly something very fishy about this locked and bolted house, and this leads me into what I suspect is the most likely theory of all, even if it's one that we're supposed to have already ruled out. William Winston has to be wrong about setting the security alarm and bolting the door. As it seems highly improbable that the couple themselves were involved in a hoax, this means that somebody else must have gained access into the property that night. And as there are no visible signs of a break-in, that would indicate that somebody else was able to just wander in or perhaps stagger in through the front door, and that the frail 79-year-old William was mistaken in his belief that he had locked up. I suppose he might have later figured out that he'd forgotten to lock up, but he daren't admit it to Minnie in case she attacked him with an axe again. So this opens up the possibility that an intruder was at work, but not necessarily a burglar or someone attempting to stage a silly hoax. It could well have been an intruder in serious trouble, a person who, for whatever reason, was badly wounded and desperately sought brief refuge in the home of the Winstons. He had chaotically stumbled around several rooms while spurting blood everywhere as William was sleeping and Minnie was in the bath, then made his exit into the night before his presence could be discovered. Wasn't the blood in the room where Minnie was having a bath? It might seem odd, and also there was loads of blood. Yeah, Danny's about to say this, that one person could produce so much blood. But we don't really know for sure exactly how much blood was spread across the house, other than Minnie and William's probably overdramatic claims. And Detective Cartwright references do copious amounts. Speaking as someone who once sliced my hand on the lid of a Fray Bento's pie, I know from personal experience that just one wound from a person can be enough to seemingly turn the entire house into an absolute bloodbath and make your home look like a murder scene. Yeah, it's like if you've cut yourself and then put a tissue on it or whatever, a surprisingly large amount of blood ends up on the tissue. Of course, there are many elements to this theory which feel a bit weird. Such an intruder would have been staggering around in some pretty unusual places, and I'm not sure what he was doing behind the TV set or in the tiny crawl space in the basement, but then again, considering his situation, he may not have been sure what he was doing either. It's strange that such a commotion didn't wake up William or disturb Minnie in the bath, particularly when so much blood was found in the bathroom. Yes. And I would have thought that the police may have eventually uncovered evidence of a seriously wounded individual bleeding all over the local neighborhood and made the connection to the incident at Fountain Drive. But it's not really possible to come up with any answer which definitively checks all of the boxes on this one. What we do know is that something truly bizarre took place at 1114 Fountain Drive that night, and the exact reason why is likely equally bizarre. My money is on the theory that doesn't involve somebody stealing blood and purposefully scattering it around a house for no immediately discernible reason. But you might be more inclined to go with the hoax theory, or with the lack of any single satisfactory answer, you might be more inclined to believe that demonic forces were spewing out their bloody rage from deep within the bowels of the possessed house. If Detective Cartwright is watching this, that makes at least one person out there who still thinks it might have been a robot. Poor Detective Cartwright, Danny. Just ragging on him this whole episode. Look, I don't know what it was. What I do know is that it wasn't demons. The house on Fountain Drive never again rained blood, although I kind of suspect that Minnie and Winston would have chosen to keep quiet about it even if it did. William died just 2 years later, in 1989, whilst Minnie continued to live in the same house right until her death in 2015. God damn, Minnie, how old were you? Which means she was 104. Wow, that's old. My great-grandma lived to be like 101. I barely remember her, but she was very old. One final curious point. If you take a virtual tour of Fountain Drive today on Google Maps Street View, you'll notice that the house has been completely blurred from view. This is not massively uncommon in itself. Any homeowner can request that Google blur their house from the map if you're worried that burglars might use the image to plot a route inside your house, or you're concerned that somebody might want to take a look at the color of your curtains. Apparently, once this has happened, the house will remain blurred forever, even if a future owner wants to put it back on the map. But it does make you wonder who made the request to Google to blur the house and why. It may obviously have been down to the publicity-shy Minnie Winston seeking to put a stop to any nosy parkers who wanted to take a closer peek at the Bloodhouse on Fountain Drive. However, it seems blindingly obvious to me that the house itself made the request just in case one of those interfering Google camera vans happened to be tootling along next time the house on Fountain Drive unleashes a terrible typhoon of human blood. Yes! I don't know what the answer to this one is. I'm sorry. It's like, it's not demons. That's the end of the episode. Thanks for being here, and I'll see you next time.
Have you ever stumbled upon a story that's just too weird to be true?
But too intriguing to ignore?
I'm Laura Anderson.
And I'm Tom Reynolds. Together, we're the hosts of Wanna Hear Something Weird?
A new podcast where we venture into the heart of mind-bending mysteries.
From peculiar legends to ghostly encounters, we try to separate fact from fiction.
Join us on a journey into the bizarre. Listen to Wanna Hear Something Weird wherever you get your podcasts.